So today we have gathered for the most auspicious celebration of the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of the most prominent acharyas in the disciplic succession after Lord Chaitanya, and his contribution to Gaudiya Vaishnavism and to the world was so great that one devotee called him the seventh Goswami. And much of the present Krishna consciousness movement that was inaugurated or founded by Srila Prabhupada is being conducted under the guidance of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And today I will focus on some of the areas in which the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is continuing the work and mission of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in an aristocratic family, a devotional family, but throughout his life he was afflicted by various illnesses, and so the tremendous contribution he made was in the face of physically trying conditions. We shouldn't think that he had an easy life or everything just came. Of course, it did come naturally in a way, but he really had to face many obstacles, even in terms of his physical health. In this year's Vyas Puja book, His Grace Kalakanta Das wrote an offering in which he listed different trials that Srila Prabhupada had faced, and suggested that Srila Prabhupada actually suffered. You know, it wasn't just an appearance of difficulties, but he actually suffered. But in spite of the difficulties, he continued. And that is a lesson for all of us. We also shouldn't expect that things will come very easily or go very smoothly. But in spite of the difficulties and miseries, we should persevere in our efforts in Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was appointed to a very high position in the government service, assistant magistrate, which is practically the highest position that any Indian held in the government of India during the British rule. The British had the idea to inculcate in the Indians the idea that Indian culture was inferior to the British or the Western or the Christian culture. And so in general they kept the Indians down, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so qualified and so popular that they were obliged to appoint him to a very high position. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha. He had 10 children. And in spite of very heavy responsibilities in the government service and as a family man, he still did so much direct service to the cause of Krishna consciousness. He utilized his time very expertly. After coming home from work, he would take a light meal, and he would take rest at about 8 o'clock, and then he would get up at midnight and write books. He wrote over 100 books. And songs, he made so many contributions. And from this we can learn how we can also engage in direct service to the cause of Krishna consciousness in spite of many responsibilities in terms of family and work, by very efficiently and enthusiastically using our time, using every moment possible for devotional service. And as a magistrate, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very efficient. He would dispose of many cases in very short order. Judges are also judged in terms of how many cases they dispose of and how many of their cases are appealed and how many of their cases are overturned in appeal. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the most outstanding record of any judge or magistrate. He disposed of so many cases so quickly, and by and large people were satisfied with his judgments, and so his decisions were not appealed or overturned. One famous case involved a yogi who falsely claimed to be an incarnation of Vishnu or Krishna. He would have an imitation Ras Lila every night, and many of the ladies in that area of Orissa would come to him and engage in these so-called pastimes. So the more intelligent persons or sober persons, they complained to the British government. And the British administration considered, you know, this is a very delicate question, because we're dealing with Hindu practices and Hindu sentiments. This would be very tricky for us to deal with. So they assigned the work to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he went to the place where the yogi was engaging in his nefarious activities to test him, first of all. So he said to the yogi, you know, you are a devotee. You have such a great contribution to make. Why should you be here in some remote rural area in Orissa? You should come to Jagannath Puri and worship Lord Jagannath and be happy in the association of devotees. So upon hearing these words, the yogi's offensive mentality came out. And he said, why should I go to Puri and worship a wooden statue? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur could conclude beyond any doubt that he was a pretender. And so he decided to arrest him and, bring him to trial. And Srila Prabhupada remarked, not specifically in relation to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but in a more general sense, that the government should oversee the activities of sadhus and people who take the position of guru. He actually said they should license them. Just like nowadays, you can't just call yourself a doctor and begin to practice medicine. You have to take a course of study, and you have to be licensed to practice as a doctor or a lawyer. So, and being a doctor mainly pertains to the body, which is not even as important as the soul. I mean, not as important as the soul. So what to speak about? So if someone is going to entrust his body or his medical care to a doctor, you know, you want to go to a doctor who's licensed. So in the same way, Prabhupada said, if people entrust their whole lives, their spiritual lives, to some spiritual teacher, the teacher should be tested according to certain standards that are given in scripture. And if he doesn't meet the qualifications, he should be declared unqualified or disqualified. So anyway, this particular yogi was creating a disturbance with his immoral, illicit activities. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur attempted to arrest him. And the yogi, this is also very interesting. because Indian culture is so advanced and evolved. You know, even the demons, even the rascals, can be very clever, very cultured, and in a way. So, anyway, in diplomatic behavior, first one tries, can say, reason and logic, no good argument, and if that fails, one tries bribery. So the yogi told Bhaktivinoda Thakur that if you cooperate with me, I will give you great powers and you will become the king of India. Well, that didn't work. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did apprehend him and take him to Puri. So then the yogi threatened him and all the people associated with him that if you do this, you know, I will cause you all to become sick and you will all die. And the yogi actually did have powers. He actually had powers. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his family members all became deathly ill. They had very high fevers, and it looked like they could die. They actually could die. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife appealed to him, please let the yogi go. It's not worth the cost of our lives to bring the yogi to justice. And many friends and well-wishers also suggested, you know, you're too valuable to, you know, lose your life over this issue. Just let him go, you know. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur refused. And eventually the day of the trial came. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood that the yogi had conserved his mystic powers in his hair. Srila Prabhupada also said that it is common that a yogi will have his mystic powers in his hair. There's also the biblical story of Samson and Delilah. Samson was so powerful, but when his hair was cut, he lost his power. Some of the modern yogis, you can see they also have hair. So this yogi, so first thing in the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered the constables to cut his hair. And, you know, he did have mystic powers, and of course he was making threats, and sparks actually came out of his hair. But anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally saw to it that his hair was cut. And eventually he was found guilty of, you know, whatever, imitating Krishna, engaging in immoral, illicit, illegal activities. And he was sentenced to prison, served time in prison, and in prison he wrote a note admitting that he had been an impostor, and he took his own life in prison. So, yeah, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so fearless, so courageous, so determined. although Bhaktivinoda Thakur was posted in Orissa, he was also the superintendent of the Jagannath temple, but his heart hankered to be closer to the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to be posted in Nadia. But he was rendering such valuable service in the government that they didn't want to let him go. They didn't want to grant him a transfer. But eventually, his desire was so strong, and even though he did have such a responsible position and prestigious position, and he had a big family to maintain, but finally he said, if you don't transfer me, I'm just going to give up government service and retire and just go. So then finally they posted him in Krishnanagar, which is near Navadvip. Eventually he ascertained the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the course of time, the Ganges River changed its course, and the landscape changed, the terrain changed, and it was a question what was the actual birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he studied maps, he consulted local people, and eventually he had a vision of a mound of earth out of which tulsis were growing. And he went to the place that believed was the birthplace, and local people also told him there was this place as he was looking, and he found it, and he considered that this was the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he wanted that confirmed by his guru, his Shiksha guru, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, and he came and he confirmed it. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur built a bhajan kutir in Gojum Dweep at Surabhi Kunj, which was the place where Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Nityananda, 400 years earlier, had established the Namhatta. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived the Namhatta and made it a very powerful preaching movement in Bengal especially. And that too was later revived in a very big way by Srila Prabhupada and his followers, especially Srila Jayapataka Swami Maharaj, who really, really spread the Namahatta in Bengal and Orissa, and now spread all over the world. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also built a house near Surabhi Kunj, in those days, quite a nice house overlooking the Jalangi River. And devotees go there on parikrama when they go to Navadvip. And his bedroom, his chair, his table, his bed, and next to it was another room where his son Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would sometimes stay. And there also there is the bhajan kutir of his disciple. Well, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So very sacred place. And there's a balcony where he would chant japa. And one day he was looking across the balcony and he had a vision of a wonderful temple and a whole community of devotees engaged in the service of the Lord, a whole township, a whole city. And this temple at Bhuta Mandir was mentioned by Lochan Das Thakur in one of his books that Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Nityananda, predicted that there would be an astounding temple rising up in Mayapur, and a whole community of devotees engaged in the service of the Lord. So naturally Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's son and in a way disciple, he took up that. Well, before that, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to build a temple at the birthplace, and he personally took up a collection. He went door to door. Such a prestigious person. He like went door to door begging people to contribute whatever little they could for the construction of the temple. I mean, imagine, say, Governor Schwarzenegger going door to door to take up a collection for a religious shrine. It would be quite unusual. And but anyway, it's comparing things that are not to be compared. But he did that, and one of the main newspapers in Calcutta, the Amrita Bazar Patrika, like appealed to the citizens that, you know, the noble Bhaktivinoda Thakur will be coming door to door. Everyone should contribute his mite to the worthy cause. And I believe it was that this family name is Ghosh. I mean, Prabhupada knew Tarun Kanti Ghosh, and his father was Tushar Kanti Ghosh, and his father was quite a prominent Bengali intellectual. I believe he was the one that called Bhaktivinoda Thakur the seventh Goswami. So anyway, he was so humble. He went door to door, and raised a collection and built the original temple of Lord Chaitanya at the birthplace in Mayapur. And but as far as a whole community of devotees, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a beginning in Mayapur. You can also see some cottages. A few of his disciples, householder disciples, built cottages, and he himself established the Gaudiya Math there with brahmacharis and sannyasis. But this project also came through the cyclic succession to Srila Prabhupada, and he really wanted to develop the Mayapur city. Certainly more has been done to establish the Mayapur city than was ever done before, and it's growing, it's definitely taking shape. And Srila Prabhupada also wanted to build a magnificent temple to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to the Panchatattva in Mayapur. And one year I was serving in the Calcutta temple, and Srila Prabhupada arrived from London, and he was like so enthusiastic about the Mayapur project, the big temple, that in London he had actually drawn a design for what the temple would look like, what the first building would look like. And when he arrived in Calcutta, he was so enthusiastic, he pulled out the blueprints and he was showing everyone. He actually worked on it with our dear God brother Nara Narayan Prabhu. And he's just so enthusiastic, just so excited, just so enthusiastic. And of course that enthusiasm spread to us. But then he did something very interesting and very instructive. He called a meeting with the devotees, you know, the senior devotees at least. And right when everyone was at the peak of their enthusiasm for the project, he raised the question of the flooding in Mayapur. Because quite frequently during the rainy season, the Ganges floods and the area becomes submerged under water to different degrees. So he was saying, you know, if we build the city there, if we build the temple there, it could be flooded. The whole thing could be lost. So he raised the question, should we even build the temple and try to establish this city there? And he, you know, of course he was Srila Prabhupada, he had so much authority. And then on top of it, his logic was so powerful, his intelligence was so powerful. So he took that position very strongly, and he suggested that we consider alternative locations for the temple. And he suggested Bir Nagar. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's was one of his places of residence. A very nice place in Bengal, very nice atmosphere. So we were convinced, you know, we were persuaded. And then again he brought up Mayapur, and in the end he concluded we should go ahead and do it in Mayapur, like, even though there's that risk and there's that difficulty, we should go ahead. And but the whole exercise really illustrated an important principle that Srila Prabhupada often mentioned, which is that in whatever we do, we should be very careful and cautious. And we should use our intelligence. And Srila Prabhupada defined intelligence as seeing the same thing from different angles of vision, from different points of view. He didn't want us to just blindly rush forward like, yeah, we're going to fulfill Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prophecy, we're going to fulfill Nityananda Prabhu's desire. And like, he wanted us, you know, we're in the material world, and in the material world there are many dangers. Padam padam, there's danger at every step. And Prabhupada wanted us to be very cautious and careful and see things from different angles of vision, not just rush ahead based on blind faith or enthusiasm. And then at the end of the discussion he had with the devotees there, he said, if you all build this temple for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and take you all back to Godhead. So he has that power. In fact, maybe we'll sing at the end a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, O Hey Vaishnava Thakur. And he says that he prays to the Vaishnava that you have Krishna and you have the power to give him to us. So we are running behind you shouting Krishna, Krishna. So that's the truth. The Vaishnava possesses Krishna. Krishna comes under the control of the love of the pure devotee. And if the pure devotee is pleased with our service, he can deliver Krishna to us. And that's really how we progress. Yes, we make our effort. We have to make our effort. But ultimately, our success depends on the mercy of higher authorities. You know, if we please them by our sincere efforts to serve and follow their instructions, you know, if they're satisfied, they can deliver Krishna to us. So we should submit ourselves at their lotus feet, roll in the dust at their lotus feet, and beg them for their mercy. We have no other hope. We have no other hope. Our effort isn't really what brings success. Our effort is there because we have to make our effort. It's our duty. I recently read in His Holiness Radhanath Swami's memoir, The Journey Home, that one night he's spending the night with Ramesh Baba in Varshana, and there was news that there was a tiger on the prowl, and the tiger had already attacked people, maybe even killed them. And in those days, Varshana was, that whole area of Raj was much less built up than now. It's still, a lot of it was like jungle. Srila Prabhupada's friend in Vrindavan, Bhagatji, had a house near the Krishna Balaram temple. He said that when he moved to Vrindavan, which was maybe, I don't know, 1930s, he could walk from Ramanreti to Govardhan Hill in the middle of the day and never see the light of the sun. the forest was so thick, just, you know, yeah, the forest was so thick. Say the 1930s, that was like just 40 years before Prabhupada began the Krishna Balaram temple. The forest was so dense, you can walk all the way from Ramanreti to Govardhan Hill and never see the light of the sun. So Varshana, it was, we can imagine even at that time, the forest, and the tiger was, and some people were even suggesting to Babaji that he should leave the place because it wasn't safe, but he said, no, I surrendered to Srimati Radharani. So he took rest, you know, and is outside and man got and well, Radhana Swami thought, well, if he's going to stay there, I'll stay there with him. So he laid down and he had like a little wooden stick by his side. So Radhana Swami asked, like, well, you know, that wooden stick? I said, yeah, there's a tiger on the prowl. And Radhana Swami said, well, what is that little wooden stick going to do against a ferocious tiger? It would be completely useless. And Ramesh Babaji replied, I know, but we have to make our effort. Actually, we're just depending on the mercy of Srimati Radharani. We have no other protection, but we have to show that we're making an effort, that we're not just doing nothing and depending on their kindness. So that's why I'm keeping the stick. So the same principle really applies to all of our devotional practices. We have to show we're making the effort, but we have no ability to move forward one inch in devotional service without mercy. And of course, the more effort we put in, you could say the more result we'll get, because we're showing how sincere we are and how eager we are. But it's really the mercy of the superior acharyas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead that enables us to move forward even one iota. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was in that mood. Every acharya is in that mood because that's how they get the mercy to and strength to really practice and preach Krishna consciousness. And so there's this song, you know, that O Vaishnava Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada also demonstrated this principle in a very unique, well, very special context, unique way. When I was in Madras, I was the first devotee from ISKCON to go there to preach. So I was meeting various prominent people, and many of them were interested, but one who took very keen interest was the Chief Justice of the High Court, Mr. Justice Viraswamy. And towards the end of Prabhupada's visit to Madras, after a 5-day program, very successful program, Justice Veera Swami arranged a pandal program for Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. I believe in anyway, and he invited all the other high court judges and high court advocates to attend. And in Srila Prabhupada's talk, he quoted the verse from Sad Goswami Astakam about the six Goswamis: Chaktva Torna Mashesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sadatrichavan. That they, although they were very highly placed people, Mandalapati, they gave it, they rejected that all as insignificant, Trichavat, and they joined the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada was appealing to these leaders, high court judges and advocates, that they should also give up their prestigious positions and join the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after the program, the Chief Justice invited Srila Prabhupada and the devotees to his home for prasad. And before the meal, oh, and he presented Srila Prabhupada this a little silver statue of Krishna, beautiful silver statue. And amongst all the adult devotees, there was one child, Saraswati, the daughter of Shamsundar and Malati. And she was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years old. And Srila Prabhupada engaged her in a very dramatic way. He held this little statue of Krishna in front of her, and he said, Saraswati, who is this? And Saraswati said, it's Krishna. And he's like holding it right in front of her, and I was like, really? She was like very attracted to this object. And then Srila Prabhupada moved the deity and put him behind his back. And then he said, Saraswati, where is Krishna? And like immediately she started looking everywhere. Like she hadn't, you know, when you're 3 years old, you don't perceive things the same way as adults do. So she started looking everywhere, like, where is Krishna? She got like so filled with anxiety. She was just like looking everywhere, like in a state of extreme anxiety. And then Prabhupada would again say, Saraswati, where is Krishna? And again she'd be looking, 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 looking. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? But she couldn't find him. Then finally, someone said, Saraswati, who has Krishna? And then Saraswati's eyes opened and her face lit up with recognition. And she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. And then then she looked at Prabhupada like with such joy and expectation, and she started like to run up to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada took the Krishna out from behind his back and gave it to her. And I was thinking, wow, you know, this was like, Prabhupada illustrated such a profound truth. You know, and it's just like the song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that you have Krishna and you have the power to deliver him to us. But to get Krishna from the Vaishnava, get love of Krishna, we have to be eager. Like Saraswati, she was like so eager, and she was so anxious without Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And Prabhupada quoted that last verse of the Sad Goswami Astakam. Hey Rad, hey Rajadevi, Kay Chalavite, Hey Nanda Suno Kutaha, Shri Govardhana Kalpa Pada Patale Kalindi Vanye Kutaha. The six Goswamis, they were wandering all over Vrindavan and crying, Oh Krishna, Oh Radharani, Oh Lalita, where are you? Are you at Govardhan Hill, or are you on the banks of the Yamuna? And these were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness. So when we have that eagerness and that and intense longing and desire and separation, then, you know, Krishna, by the mercy of the devotee or devotees, will, you know, gradually manifest himself to us. We have to have that eagerness. And that eagerness arises when, you know, when we become purified, and we become purified when we make the effort, you know, concerted effort. Once I had a dream a couple of years ago, and in this dream, Srila Prabhupada said to me, you have to be mad for Krishna. And I mean, it was a nice dream. And then I think shortly thereafter, Radhana Swami came to stay with me, and I mentioned the dream to him. And when I said that, you know, mad for Krishna, he said, oh, that's a very advanced stage. So it's not something to be taken lightly, I'm mad for Krishna, but it should be our goal. And we approach that goal by really making strenuous efforts, you know, unstinting, not holding anything back. So much for Krishna, so much for me, but no, everything for Krishna, nothing for me. In that mood, of course, we have to keep our body and soul together. That's also one of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instructions, that yes, our goal is Kirtaniya Sadahari, to always chant the holy name of Krishna. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur raises the question, well, what about maintaining our body or our family's bodies? And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that to take care of the body, or to take the measures necessary to maintain the body, which also includes working, earning money, spending money, the time spent on that does not violate the principle of Kirtaniya Sadahari, always chanting the holy name of Krishna, if we do it just enough to meet our requirements, so that we can use the time, all the other time, for Krishna Kirtan. So he was also very practical. There's so many instructions, so many wonderful books. Of course, Harinam Chintamani is a small book about chanting the holy name, but Jiva Dharma, Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, so full of valuable instructions. And in Jiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttama devotees. And of course the Bhagavatam, of course everyone, all of our acharyas follow the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam as the basic authorities. So the Bhagavatam says in relation to the Madhyam Bhagavat, Prema Maitri Kripa Peksha Sakaroti Samadhyama, that he gives his love to Krishna, he makes friendship with devotees, he is merciful to the innocent, and he neglects upeksha, he neglects the envious. So almost everyone in the material world is envious of Krishna. I mean, unless you're a pure devotee, you do have some envy of Krishna. But there are people who are like really envious. They don't want to hear about Krishna, and if you're pursuing Krishna consciousness, they discourage you. They may try to put obstacles, they may try to convince you, there's so many things. Even our own family members. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this, neglect of non-devotees. And he's avoiding the association of non-devotees. Asat sang tyaga e vaishnava char. Sri Sangi Eka Sadhu Krishna Bhakta. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, asat. Sat is a word for devotee. So asat means non-devotees. Asat sang tyaga, we should give up the association of non-devotees. And who are non-devotees? Stri sangi eka sadhu, one is a person who is attached to sense gratification, especially the opposite sex for sense gratification. Stri sangi eka sadhu Krishna bhakta ar, and the other is just an abhakta, someone who's not a devotee of Krishna. So we're supposed to shun the association of non-devotees. But what do we do if we have family members who are non-devotees? What do we do if we work in a place with non-devotees? So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur answers that avoiding their association does not mean that we cannot have normal human interaction with them, as is expected in a workplace or in a family. But it means that we should not associate with them in relation to our spiritual advancement. We shouldn't take their advice in relation to our spiritual progress. And the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada's instructions on the ideal family life, he says the same thing, that if if a family member, if you're a devotee and a family member or family members tell you that you should, you know, lead a different kind of life, it happens all the time. The Bhagavatam says outwardly you should agree and say, yes, what you say is very good. But inwardly you should continue, you know, in your own determination and keep your life simple. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this point. You know, should we abandon family members who are not devotees? And he says no. Of course that would depend, you know, on one's ashram. But he says no, but just, you know, but keep the association of devotees for your spiritual advancement. And that's the other point about the importance of the association of devotees. And in Harinam Chintamani, well, first Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses the holy name in general, and then he discusses the 10 offenses. And the first is sadhu ninda, blaspheming devotees. Radha Priya Mataji, do you have to go now? Sorry? For me? Oh, that's not so important. In 20 minutes, I think we'll finish soon. But if you're going to be in anxiety, that's okay that you can go. But I have a little something, doesn't matter. Yes, so the first of the 10 offenses is sadhu ninda. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very analytical and very precise. So with each of the 10 offenses, he begins by defining the terms, which is natural, it's logical. So sadhu ninda, well, ninda is easy. Ninda means to criticize, to blaspheme, to find fault. But sadhu, who's a sadhu? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses the different qualities of a sadhu mentioned by Krishna in the 11th canto. And one is Matsharana, he's taken shelter of Krishna. And Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also lists 26 qualities of a devotee, mainly based on those mentioned in the 11th canto. And out of the 26 qualities, one is Krishnaika Sharana, one who has taken exclusive shelter of Krishna, or the holy name of Krishna. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if one has that primary qualification of having taken shelter of Krishna, or the holy name of Krishna, he or she is considered a sadhu, even if he or she does not have the other 25 qualities. And if one has the other 25 qualities but does not have the qualification of having taken exclusive shelter of Krishna, then the other 25 qualities are not of much value. So that's the real qualification for a sadhu. And if someone has surrendered to Krishna, taken shelter of Krishna, he or she is a sadhu. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses possible grounds for criticizing a sadhu. And they say, okay, well, this is a sadhu, this person has taken shelter of Krishna. But they might criticize the person because the person has taken a low birth, or because the person is of a lower caste, or because the person had engaged in sinful activities before taking shelter of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, or because the person still has traces or vestiges of sinful activities even after coming to the association of devotees. One might think one could criticize like that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says no. That these are all sadhu ninda. They're all sadhu ninda. So we have to be careful about this. Because the sadhus, our spiritual advancement depends on the association of sadhus. Our practical service to the mission depends on the cooperative effort of the sadhus. So we blaspheme, you know, find fault, backbite. We're going to destroy our devotional service. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses people who could be considered sadhus, but who actually are not sadhus. Because, okay, we don't want to mistake a sadhu for an asadhu, you know. Like sometimes people will say, there's so much to say, but they'll say, oh, you know, you're not a devotee. You know, devotees are humble. You know, you're not humble, so you're not a devotee. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if you're surrendered to Krishna, even if you don't have the other 25 qualifications, such as humility, you're still considered a sadhu. Sadhu eva samantavya. But we also don't want to mistake an asadhu for a sadhu. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions three categories of asadhus who are often mistaken for sadhus. And one is the Mayavadi. Mayavadis are not considered sadhus by this definition. They're not actually sadhus. Sadhu means devotee. The Mayavadis are not considered sadhus, although they may dress as sadhus and may be considered as sadhus by others. The other category, or another category, is the atheists. There are even atheists who are considered sadhus. Buddhists, and some Buddhists, not all, but some Buddhists are atheistic. Definitely non-theistic. But we're not naming any particular group or individual here. And then the other category, third category, is Dharma Dvaji. Dharma means religion, and Dvaja means flag. So Dharma Dvaji means someone like waving the flag of religion. But he's not really a devotee. Dharma Dvaji means a pretender. Means a pretender. Like, you know, just to help you understand, not to find fault with anyone, but like in the previous administration here in the government of the United States, many people had the feeling that some of the, you know, political leaders were like Dharma Dwajis, like raising the flag of religion, you know, being Christian. But they weren't. Anyway. So These are three categories of asadhus, non-devotees who are sometimes mistaken as sadhus. Now, Srila Prabhupada regularly criticized people who were revered as spiritual leaders in India. And as he said in his own words, that perhaps for the first time, I am the only one who is exposing them as fools and rascals. A very heavy statement. And many people would become upset with Srila Prabhupada when he would criticize some of the revered popular religious figures or so-called religious figures of India. There was one man in Juhu. He actually, I think he moved to Juhu later, but he had attended the first Bombay Pandal. And Prabhupada was criticizing Shankaracharya. And this person, very intelligent person, very austere, and quite well read. Years later, he came to me and he said, you know, I was attending that Pandal program, and when Prabhupada would criticize Shankaracharya, I would think, who does this man think he is? No, Shankaracharya is perhaps the greatest acharya in the history of India. And who does he think he is to criticize him? So he had negative thoughts about Srila Prabhupada. But somehow or other, later, he got one of Srila Prabhupada's books, either Teachings of Lord Chaitanya or Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which the whole history of, you know, Lord Shiva coming as Shankaracharya to bewilder the atheists by preaching Mayavad philosophy. Like, he read it and he understood it. And he came to me and he said, you know, after reading this book, I realized that everything that Prabhupada was saying was true. And then he surrendered. He became a devotee. So one other incident involved Srila Prabhupada's almost constant companion on his morning walks in Juhu Beach, Dr. Patel, Dr. C.P. Patel. And anyway, one morning in particular, Dr. Patel brought up some famous popular religious figure of India, praising him. And Srila Prabhupada said, he's a rascal. Dr. Patel got upset. You know, how can you say that he's a rascal? And Prabhupada said, I'm not saying, Krishna's saying, you know, Namam Duskritina Mudha Prapadyam Te Naradama. I'm not saying, Krishna's saying. It's a simple test. Is he surrendered to Krishna or not? You know, if he's not surrendered to Krishna, he's a rascal, he's a fool, he's a demon. I'm not saying, Krishna's saying. But anyway, Dr. Patel really got upset because Prabhupada had really picked on someone cherished by Dr. Patel. And Dr. Patel raised his voice, and Prabhupada raised his voice back, and Dr. Patel raised his voice more, and Prabhupada raised his voice more. And finally, they were literally shouting at each other. And it was scary, actually. It was scary. And Dr. Patel's cronies, who usually supported him, they tried to restrain him. They're saying, you know, Swamiji has a heart condition. You know, don't upset him so much. And they're like physically, and he's like, it's like in a boxing ring, you know, like the bell rings, the round is over, but they're still like, you know, and the referee's trying to pull them apart, and their, you know, trainers are pulling them. They wouldn't stop. But then finally his people pulled him away, and so there are many details to this story, but anyway, then Dr. Patel stopped coming. For the first time in years, he stopped coming. He would usually come to Prabhupada's room and escort him, you know, take him in his car or walk with him to the beach, or at least meet up with him at the beach. But after this, he didn't come. And Prabhupada also said, all right, from now on, no discussion. We'll only read the Krishna book on the morning walk. So we'd read the Krishna book. And Dr. Patel was like avoiding. And then one morning, the way he describes it, like Prabhupada was walking one direction, maybe near the ocean, and Dr. Patel was walking the opposite direction, far from the ocean. And the way he described it, something in his heart just made him like change directions and walk straight to Srila Prabhupada. And he like bowed and offered respect to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And he said, Prabhupada, you know, I'm sorry, but I've been taught to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Prabhupada said, yes. And I have been taught to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. So that's, acharyas have to do that, but it's not ninda. I mean, it can be, but it's not ninda if they do it to help people who could be misled by them. You know, to help people who could fall into a bad association thinking that they were getting the association of a saintly person. But otherwise, you know, ninda shunya. Rupa Goswami says one should take shelter of a Vaishnava whose heart is completely free from the propensity to criticize others. Ninda shunya. They have no desire. Pure devotee just wants to chant the holy name and hear about Krishna and preach the message of Krishna. He has no interest in criticizing others, even non-devotees, demons. But for the sake of preaching, for the sake of Krishna's mission, Mahaprabhu's mission, the previous acharya's mission, they do it just to help others, to free them from false attachments so they can take to Krishna consciousness. Or even if they're in Krishna consciousness, to prevent them from unknowingly falling into bad association and being diverted. So that's the mercy of the acharya, the sadhu, the preacher. But otherwise, they have no interest in criticizing anyone or anything. They're happy just to chant and hear about Krishna. So today's a most auspicious day. We really take this opportunity. I mean, of course, our system is parampara. We We approach our immediate spiritual master and through him the predecessor acharyas. But on special days like today, on appearance days and disappearance days, we can approach, it's also by the mercy of our spiritual master, but we can approach them directly, like we did. We offer directly, Pushpanjali, and we can beg him, please, give me your mercy. Please give me some of what you have, which I want desperately. And if I don't want it desperately, then pray, make, even if I don't have the desire is not very strong, please give me the desire, or make my desire stronger. Wherever we are on that path of desire, we can pray to get the desire, to increase the desire. Because it all depends on desire. Everything depends on desire. Krishna fulfills all desires. And if what we really desire is Krishna and Krishna's service, he'll fulfill our desire. And the way we show our desire is by making the effort, by spending the time. If we spend the time chanting, trying to chant with attention, even if we aren't even able to pay attention that well, our mind is still, but we just take the time to make the effort, Krishna will see, oh, this person is taking the time to try to develop his relationship with me. Or reading Srila Prabhupada's books, even if we don't understand exactly what we're reading, even if we can't appreciate it or relate to it, but if we just spend the time reading, trying to understand, hoping to come to appreciate, then Krishna, the previous acharyas, will say, oh, this person is spending the time. It's association. Chanting means associating with Krishna. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam means associating with Krishna. This person wants my association. He's taking the time to be with me. And so Krishna will reciprocate. It's just showing Krishna we want to develop a relationship with him. We're not qualified. By his mercy, he'll give us the qualification, but it's just showing him we want to develop our relationship with him by spending time with him. To develop a relationship with someone, you have to spend time with the person. So chanting with attention, spending time with Krishna, reading Prabhupada's books, spending time with Krishna, worshipping the deity. Shradhanvita, with faith, not just mechanically, externally, worshipping the deity with faith and devotion. Spending time with Krishna. If when Krishna sees we want to spend time with him, develop our relationship with him, he'll help us. We just have to spend the time. Make the effort and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and all of our teachers and acharyas, they want us. It's like Prabhupada was holding Krishna. He actually wanted to give Krishna to Saraswati, but he could only really properly give it to her when she was sufficiently anxious, sufficiently eager, when her desire was strong enough that she would really appreciate it. So they have Krishna, they have the power to give him to us, they want to give him to us. But, they don't want to cast pearls before a swine. They want us to really value what they have to give us. And when we really get a sense of what that most valuable treasure is and really want it and are taking time to develop our relationship with Krishna, with the devotees, and they see that that's really what we want and nothing else, then they'll fulfill our desire by their mercy. And if that's what we want, if Krishna and Krishna's service is all that we want, we will get it by their mercy. Hare Krishna. So, well, I know we've gone late, because no breakfast. But I did think, for those who have the time and can stay, we'll sing that song. I requested Mukunda Datta Prabhu to sing that song, O He Vaishnava Thakur, in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses the mood that we all want to have and develop. And like offering a drop of Ganges water to the Ganges, we can offer that mood in his words to him, so that he will give us a drop of faith in the holy name. Hare Krishna.